still waiting, waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Born of evil, made of steel, forged by the bodies it leaves in its wake. The Elimination Chamber knows no remorse, offers no solace, leaves no survivors.
No way out.
Tonight, these men will engage in battles to seek championships, fulfill destiny, and tear each other apart. The road to WrestleMania is filled with pain, agony, and for some, there is no way out.
Welcome to Review Raw, everybody. It's John Pollock, joined by Waiting.
No. Review away.
What did I say?
You said Review Raw.
Oh, my God.
That's tomorrow.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. Sorry. My recall is not that great.
Oh.
Review Away, everybody, with John Pollock and Waiting. There are too many shows with two similar names. And as one person asked us this week, Way, why is it Review Away? What is so way about it? And clearly not understanding the play on words.
I don't even really understand the play on words anymore. It's so far removed from what it originally was.
What was it originally?
It was originally Ask Away.
Yeah. Well, it was... You're not a thing. It was like, Ask Away.
Yeah.
Review Away.
I understand.
It's a play on words.
But, Ask Away is at least something you can use in a daily sentence. Nobody in... their daily life says, well, just review away.
Sure they do now. They they use it in context of this show.
Okay. But I can see if new listeners get lost.
I found that with us doing more interviews now, when I email people to contact them and stuff, and I'm not talking to them on the phone, I always say, to me and my co-host, Wei Ting, and then I have to put in brackets, pronounce W-A-Y.
What?
Because your name doesn't look like Way.
Yeah,
I can understand how people would not understand how you pronounce W-A-I. Well, I don't think I would have known that.
Sure, and you can blame the Cantonese pinyin pronunciation language for that.
They made
it's so fucked up.
But you know what I applaud you on is that I found, especially it was in high school when I would I'd have students in my class who they would come over to Canada. And they'd say like their Chinese name, but my Canadian name is Peter. I'm like that is not your name at all.
Sure,
you're just adopting a new name. You were given a name and you run with it. Wait,
yes. Well, thank you, John. I mean, it's always, you know, like it's something that when I was younger, it's always kind of bothered me. But as with a lot of things, as you grow up, you start to embrace it, and I'm definitely thankful to have a bit more of a unique name.
Did you get teased in school? Because I got teased all the time with John because it was around grade six where I discovered that is what you also call a toilet, and there was also that stupid John the Leprechaun song that I fucking hate.
How does that go?
You can look it up. I hate the song.
I've never heard
that
song.
It's so annoying. It's like grade 1 through 4. It's like, that's the best you've got.
John's
that's
a bit
hilarious.
Tough to make fun of, though, because you're...
No, it's
you're,
not.
No, but you're bound to find at least two other Johns in your same class, probably.
I was always, like, the only John for all of elementary school. There was no other Johns in my school, which was strange. I agree.
I was never really made fun of because I went to school with a lot of other Asian immigrants, so it wasn't a big deal.
Well, that's good. Kids are terrible.
Only you make fun of me.
Yeah, I guess your teasing didn't begin till second year of university, where I did it as a tribute for you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Call Waiting. Which I will tell you, my mom, whenever the law comes up, she always asks how you're doing because she's like, call Waiting. That's so clever.
Yes.
Let's get on to this review, everybody, of WWE. I will preface this by saying I understand this pay-per-view is called No Way Out. I am probably going to call it Elimination Chamber numerous times. I have it labeled here, WWE Elimination Chamber. It was not till the following year when they changed it from No Way Out to Elimination Chamber.
That surprises me, John, because how could you not know the name of this pay-per-view? They would use it as a pun, like 15 times on this show.
There's no way out.
In the opening promo, in the little opening video, you just hear over and over and over again this deep-voiced man saying, "In the Elimination Chamber, there's no way out." And then you would hear people do it in their promos. Say, "There's no way out of this Elimination Chamber."
Yet the Undertaker discovered there was a way out.
Yeah, yes way out.
So let's start off this. It began with a video on the road to WrestleMania, and it kind of set the table for the top matches tonight with images of past Elimination Chambers featuring lots of blood in black and white. And the announcers for tonight, we had Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler on Raw, Joey Styles and Taz on ECW, and a team I completely ever forgot existed and still can't remember being together. Michael Cole and Jonathan Coachman were once the SmackDown announce team. Yeah. And I think this was a transition between when JBL had just left to go back. He came back at the Rumble, I believe. So he had just come back, and man, was that a big hole to fill. JBL was great during his year and a half announcing.
What I found odd about that team, though, was the fact that Coach was playing a babyface the entire night.
And so was Cole.
Yes, which is odd considering today. But Coach has just finished his Raw GM stint and moved over to SmackDown, and for some reason on this show, I wasn't watching very closely at this time, but on this show he was playing a complete babyface.
You're right, he was a babyface here, and he lasted a while, well, a couple of months before they put Mick Foley in that spot, and then eventually
Coach went to ESPN.
Yeah, Coach moved way upwards and onwards. So I will note here, it sounded great to have Jim Ross kick off this show. The theme song, which we would hear throughout this show, was Fake It by Seether.
Thank you.
Fake It. God, this song was old by the first hour.
Fake It. I didn't even pay attention. Sorry.
Opening match, everybody. Chavo Guerrero against a babyface CM Punk for the ECW title. Punk comes out in this super baggy t-shirt and starts making the belt gesture. I'm going to win the ECW title, everybody. Mm-hmm. And there is this big video package for this match with Punk invoking his rematch clause for the title. Then it featured Punk dressed as a mariachi band member, which, man, the WWE loves mariachi bands.
Sure.
And
well, that's what you think of when you think of Mexican.
Yeah. So
what else?
Here's this very unique angle, everybody, where Punk was part of the mariachi band, grabbed a guitar, and hit Guerrero with the guitar.
Sure.
So
what?
Ties in perfectly with Edge and Del Rio. And then Armando Estrada, who was the GM of ECW at the time, made a match I wish was on the pay-per-view instead of this, a Ghost of Mexico match between Guerrero and Punk.
Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, that's so lessened. I thought he said Ghost of Mexico.
I'm sorry to disappoint you. What would a Ghost of Mexico
I have no idea. Gulf of Mexico.
Like a
match.
Mariachi ghost?
That would have been so much better. I thought it was like they had to go out into the night and it
Ghost
was all dark.
Of Mexico match?
That's what I heard. Well,
so they would. What constitutes a Ghost of Mexico match to you would be to fight in the dark, on the street.
Yeah, exactly.
In Kentucky,
well,
wherever they were. When
you
they
realize
the
fuel I just gave to our Facebook group, who are just going nuts right now, making ghosts.
Mexican ghost, okay.
The Ghost of Mexico match, which would have been a way better idea, and I'm going to send this to TNA.
All right.
This would headline their next pay-per-view.
Sure.
And the winner has to throw their opponent into the Gulf of Mexico, which I did note here on these notes. And we see a GTS, and Guerrero goes back first into the water. And everyone, this was in February.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been cold here.
Mm-hmm.
So we go into the match, which was...
But near the Gulf of Mexico, would it be cold?
I would think so.
Where is the Gulf of Mexico? Like, where, what American city would they have been in?
I'm guessing near New Mexico.
Okay. I don't know how cold it would be in February at that time.
I would assume it'd be fairly cold.
It's pretty warm in the south year round, I would think.
Some geography major, please post on us. Tell us what the weather is like. Tell us what the weather is like right now around the Gulf of Mexico. We did not go to school for geography.
We're so
ignorant. We went to school to talk about
wrestling. Gulf of Mexico?
We're going to get a map and a fucking discipline from somebody. The match starts off and Guerrero kicks Punk off of the apron to the floor and he asks the ref to count CM Punk out, which was funny because that would be a spot later in the Cena Orton match. There's a body lock by Guerrero around the waist of Punk. Fans rally behind Punk. I hated Punk here as a babyface. So boring in comparison.
Sure. Were they really rallying behind him? Okay.
They were chanting Punk.
Because at one point, Punk goes for the Three Amigos. And that's when
when they turned on him, because it was like he was mocking Eddie instead of paying tribute to him. It's like, here, I'm going to hit the Three Amigos on Eddie's nephew.
Yeah.
And it was a total heel spot as it came across, as I would expect it to be. I mean, even though Chavo's the heel, that's exactly the reaction I would have anticipated.
You know, I found it tough to buy Chavo as an intimidating, in this case, an intimidating heavyweight heel here, because he's the champion of ECW. I mean, Chavo is always the smaller guy in a match. His offense consists of a lot of high-flying babyface-like moves and counters. And certainly in this match, at least from that Three Amigos spot forward, to me it seemed like he was playing the underdog here. He was always trying to catch up to Punk, and he would always counter on Punk's mistakes.
Punk also did the Eddie Guerrero dance, which also got boos at this point. After the dance, I would have cut the Eddie stuff out, but he still went to the Three Amigos. Then we get another GTS attempt, and Guerrero grabs the top rope, gets onto the apron, and then hits a Crow Cop kick to get knocked to the floor. Sorry, Punk hits the Crow Cop kick. Then we see a top rope Hurricane Rana that's blocked by Guerrero, and then he hits a frog splash to the back of Punk and gets the clean win here.
And the fans are cheering. They're cheering for Chavo's
I thought the
Chavo's
Eddie spots
victory.
Completely changed the dynamic of the match, where
perhaps.
It suddenly was like, is Punk disrespecting Eddie? And that's how I think they took it. Mm-hmm. And then Chavo got the win. Pretty average opening match. Nothing too special here. Then we got B-roll of the Las Vegas skyline with Michael Cole discussing what's coming up. And then we get a replay of the angle with Edge getting married to Vicky, and Rey Mysterio attacks both of them, and Vicky takes a springboard seated senton from Rey in the wheelchair. And, man, Vicky was significantly heavier.
Three years
ago.
Yeah, looked like it.
Yet now is when they do the fat jokes on her. Poor woman.
Rey, around this time, he had a legitimate arm injury he suffered, didn't he?
Yes, this is when they go backstage with Mike Adamley, who is with Rey Mysterio, and says it was an accident what he did to Vicky, but he's not going to apologize. And then they show his bicep, which is legitimately torn. And Rey says it can't get any worse, and he's going to wrestle tonight.
Yeah, what was it, from a house show?
I believe it was from a house show. I could be wrong. I don't think it was a television match, but they had huge plans for... Let's just put this into context, everybody. If you were Rey Mysterio at this point in time, he was scheduled for a big tag match with Floyd Mayweather, where it was originally going to be Floyd and Rey teaming up, and I think originally they were going to go against MVP and somebody else. And at one point, they'd even approached Oscar De La Hoya, and this was a year removed from them doing over 2.4 million buys on pay-per-view. It would have been huge. And then Oscar wasn't involved. They were still going to involve Rey. It was going to be a huge, huge attraction match that Rey would have been a part of. And this injury took him out of WrestleMania. The year before, he was one of the names being thrown out to be part of the Donald Trump angle and represent Trump against Vince McMahon's representative. And he missed that show as well. Wow. So that's two, not just Mania payoffs, but like the most promoted match on each of those Manias he missed out on. And then return the next year to fight JBL in a squash. So it sucked to be Rey Mysterio during this point in time.
And this year, Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes, everybody, in the nose match. So anyway, Floyd Mayweather Jr. then walks in and receives boos. Shockingly, the biggest heel in boxing, who we're going to present as a babyface, got booed. Rey marks out huge for Floyd. You would have thought that The Rock just made his return with how big he marked out. And Mayweather Jr. comes off as just such a heel here. The guy is a natural heel. That's how he operates when a camera's running.
Yeah, what I noticed from the get-go, his character, the way he interacted with Rey, the way he spoke, the way he looked, he fits perfectly into this professional wrestling world.
He's a great character, but he's a great heel character.
Sure.
So anyway, we then it ends off with Mike Adamley saying, "Best of luck, Ray. Best of luck, Ray."
That's not his role. He should be unbiased.
He should be. He absolutely should be unbiased. And we then move on. There's going to be a text message poll for the Raw Elimination Chamber match coming up later tonight. And then we saw Chris Jericho warming up in the locker room. He's in the Chamber match. And then they played a video to preview the Chamber match coming up, because tonight there would be two Chamber matches, way, a Raw and SmackDown version, where the winners would get title shots at WrestleMania. And we go first to the SmackDown Chamber match. It's coming up second here. And when this match was first announced to everybody, people thought this was going to be one of the worst matches in history because of the talent involved. We had MVP, Big Daddy V, who was accompanied by Matt Stryker, who is his manager, The Great Khali with Ranjan Singh, Finlay, Batista, and The Undertaker, with the big giant targets being Big Daddy V and The Great Khali in this match. How is this going to work? And Michael Cole and Jonathan Coachman calling the match here. I could not be less interested in these two. MVP comes out. This was when he had like his superstar entrance with like the big blow up entrance at the front. Looked like a real star at this point, and eventually this was taken away from him and he was given an entrance like everybody else. Khali comes out. He was billed as the master of the Punjabi prison match. And they promote that tomorrow night it's going to be Vince McMahon against Hornswoggle in a steel cage match on Raw.
Yeah.
Too bad this wasn't an extra on the DVD.
No.
Batista and Undertaker start the match. They play up that they fought at WrestleMania last year. And the crowd turns on Batista when he makes his comeback on The Undertaker. They were solidly behind Taker in this match. Big Daddy V is the third entrant in. Michael Cole announces him as this block of man. This block of man.
Okay. I would say more of a sphere.
This guy to me resembled, Big Daddy V looked like the cousin of this guy Arthur, who's on the current season of The Biggest Loser.
Huh.
He came in at close to 700 pounds. Well, he was near 700 pounds, lost some weight, came onto the show, and on this last Tuesday show, he lost 20 pounds in a week, and he's down to like 415 pounds.
Wow.
So Big Daddy V should be on The Biggest Loser.
He should.
It's been a great season, actually, this week.
I don't watch that show.
Rulon Gardner's on.
Really?
He was the 2000 gold medalist in wrestling. Anyway, The Undertaker falls back into the fencing here early on, and the cage door gives way, and Taker takes this nasty spill to the floor, this off a headbutt from Big Daddy V. This looked like a terrible fall.
Yeah.
Like you were falling off of this elevated ring to the floor, where he might have hit some steps on the way down.
Like, back first.
Not realize, like, it's one thing to know you're taking a bump off an apron, but when you go into the fence expecting it to catch you and it doesn't, terrible.
Yeah, and it wasn't supposed to happen, obviously, because this is no way out.
Yeah, this was a, except if they do not construct the chamber properly. Undertaker's had some bad luck at these chamber matches.
That's true.
Because the following year, he got burnt.
Two years later. That was last year.
Was it last year?
Wasn't it last year?
I don't think he was back last year. Wasn't he out at, I don't think he wrestled at last year's show. I'm pretty sure it was 2009, because it was going in the, anyway, it was one of the February chamber matches where he went in. You know what? You're right. It was last year. Mm-hmm. And he got, because that's right, Michaels came in to cost him the match at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my recall's off.
And
yeah, he got burnt in the entrance. The pyro guy, like, fucking torched him by mistake, and the guy was fired right away.
A lot of people, a lot of people have probably been fired because of this chamber and Undertaker.
Jesus Christ. Like, this guy's not in the best, you know, he's taxed his body a lot. The last thing you need to do is light this guy on fire.
Yeah.
Legit.
He won't be in it this year.
No, he will not be in it this year. Thank God. He probably said after last year, fuck this match. Anyway, Taker does come back into the ring, and surprisingly, he's not dead. Batista makes a comeback with a spine buster onto Big Daddy V for a big pop, and it leads to Taker hitting a DDT to Big Daddy V on the steel floor. I hate the name Big Daddy V. What does it? What does that mean? Big Daddy Viscera. Well, let's shorten it to V.
Yeah.
Batista then eliminates V after he takes the DDT from Undertaker. The Great Khali is the next one in and hits Batista with an overhand chop to the head, and that was my favorite Khali move, when he would do this tomahawk chop to the head of a guy.
I like it too.
I thought it always looked great.
That's all he needs.
Yeah, that's all he needs. That's all he should be in for.
In like the video game, when
quick
you control,
squash matches.
when you control the Great Khali in a video game, every button should be the chop.
I agree. And and the option of Ariel Winter dancing as he goes down to the ring.
That would be awesome.
I so wanted her to take that chop to the head. That would have made that segment to me.
Yeah.
And then Hunter comes back to set up Khali and Hunter.
Oh, to save Ariel Winter.
Yeah.
To save his daughter.
Yes.
Okay. The Vegas chants start chanting, "You can't wrestle," at the Great Khali.
Moments into this. It's been 30 seconds and fans were chanting this already, not even giving him a chance. I will say Khali looked much more mobile than he does now.
Really?
Which is saying a lot because he could barely move here. Taker teases a choke slam. Khali avoids it and hits the tree slam for a two count on Undertaker. Khali then hits a clothesline to Batista, and this was awesome because Khali nearly lost his balance delivering the clothesline. Khali then applied his other great move, the Khali vice grip, to Batista, but Batista powers out. This was Crush's old finish, where he would squeeze guys' heads and put them in the air.
You know, as a kid, I totally bought it. I totally bought that move.
I used to have the Royal Rumble game on Sega Genesis, and Crush was the best to have because you'd have to wear him out so that he was dazed so that you could physically go behind him, and then you would hit like A and B, and you just squash his head, lift him up, and drop him on his ass.
I think it's a cool move.
Great video game finish. I don't know if I'd want to take it if I was a performer. Like that's especially when Khali was the one that is administering it.
I don't sense any real danger with a move like that, though. You're just holding a guy's head.
Khali's hands are gigantic, and this is a guy that I don't think understands his own strength.
Okay. I don't know.
Well, it's fun to watch, everybody. Which is why we talk about it. Anyway, Batista powers out. Ranjan Singh then gets on the apron. He's booted off by the Undertaker. Then Taker applies the Gogo Plata onto Khali, who taps out, and he keeps the hold on to Khali for a while, and then finally lets go. And somewhere, Eddie Bravo was smiling.
Yes.
His hold was getting over by the Undertaker.
At some point, Khali starts bleeding from the mouth while in the hold here.
And I didn't notice that.
Yeah, the camera actually catches it, but they never really talk about it. In passing, I think it was Coach that's attributed it to the Gogo Plata.
Yeah, internal bleeding.
He's choking and bleeding.
He's choking the life out of him.
Yeah.
There's no way out of the Gogo Plata. Taker then, this was a funny spot. He takes Batista, grabs him by the legs, and pulls him back first across the steel grating on the floor.
Yeah.
What a heel move. Just a dick thing to do. The next entrant is Finlay, who comes in and goes into a running knee from the Undertaker. Taker then kicks out of the Celtic Cross, and Finlay makes a comeback. Finlay throws Taker through the plexiglass of one of the chambers.
The bulletproof Lexon glass.
But it's not Undertaker proof.
It's not Irish whip proof.
No. The Irish whip by Finlay. Why wasn't that his finish? Just throwing guys into shit. That should have been his setup for the Celtic Cross. Irish whip him into the turnbuckle. He's dazed and he hit the Celtic Cross.
Why not?
Fuck, bring back Finlay for that.
Just for the Irish whip finish.
No, let's give him a midget. Coachman notes that this match is living up to all of the expectations people had coming into this match, which is fine to say, but the expectations were atrocious, and this match, to me, was over-delivering.
Mm-hmm.
Way over-delivering. MVP is the last one in, but he does want to enter, and then Undertaker comes and attacks him. MVP then takes off what is called his decorative chain, and then he chokes Finlay with his decorative chain, his bling. Taker juices following punches from MVP. MVP keeps attacking Taker. And then MVP scales the pod. Taker climbs up too and eventually tosses him with a choke, grabs his throat, and MVP flips off the pod into the ring back first. Finlay then rolls over and eliminates MVP. And this was when MVP, people were like really behind him to be getting that next push. A lot of people thought he would win Money in the Bank and get elevated. And this was around the time where WWE was like, no, we're not pushing this guy. And he just fell into oblivion.
Mm. That spot looked great, though, the chokeslam off the pod.
Hornswoggle then pops up from under the ring and he throws the shillelagh to Finlay. Batista attempts a Batista bomb, but Finlay hits him with the shillelagh while he hoists him up and gets a near fall on Batista. Finlay finally takes a choke slam onto the steel floor by the Undertaker, and he's pinned by Taker to be eliminated. So we're down to Batista and Taker. Batista juices following the shillelagh. Lots of blood on this show, way. Lots of blood. We get a yay boo spot from Taker and Batista going back and forth with punches. and it ends with a Batista bomb to Taker, a delayed pin attempt. Taker kicks out with the crowd popping. Then Batista's on the turnbuckle with punches. Taker counters with the last ride, crawls over, another kick out by Batista. Batista then blocks a tombstone and throws Taker over the top rope to the steel floor. And then we get the finish, which I thought was really cool. Batista lifted Taker up to ram him into the steel, but Taker moved backwards. They go over the top rope into the ring, and they flip over with Taker then delivering the tombstone. This looked perfect, I thought. It came across really well. Taker got the win, and everyone went nuts here for Taker. I thought this match, I remember this specifically, thinking this match is going to be horrible, and it ended up being really, really well booked.
Yeah, I completely agree. The finish was booked fantastically and incredibly well executed. They couldn't have done it better.
And really, when you look on paper, I mean, this shouldn't have, I think, gotten the hate it did going in. Like, you could easily book around Big Daddy V and Khali for quick eliminations, which is what they did. And when you come down to the rest of them, I mean, Taker, Finlay, and MVP, and Batista, I mean, all of them are good in some kind of role. I mean, Batista's not going to carry a 30-minute match, but when you have that many guys in there, you can book around a lot, especially when you have Taker and Finlay in there.
That's the key word, though. You have to book around them, which we often, more often than not, see that doesn't happen. And if three of the six participants in this match are Batista, Big Daddy V, and Khali, I don't see.
I don't put Batista at their level. I always thought Batista, when he was motivated and in with the right guys, I thought he more than held his own. He wasn't a guy that was going to carry stuff, but he was. I don't think the lost causes that Viscera and Khali were.
But this was a very well booked match, and it was essentially a Batista Undertaker singles match with a bunch of obstacles thrown in there.
Yeah, you're right. We go backstage. Edge is in the locker room with the Edgeheads. Do you remember these? Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins when they were aligned with him, and people knew who Curt Hawkins was. They tell Edge that Undertaker's 15-0 at WrestleMania, basically saying he's fucked at WrestleMania. And Edge says, "Thanks for reminding me of that." Teddy Long walks in. He's in charge with Vicky away tonight. It's like opposite now, where Teddy's the main GM and Vicky's the acting GM. And it says that tonight the Edgeheads are banned from ringside for his match with Ray. The heels are upset. So that leads to a...
They all do the stunned stare up to the ceiling look.
Yes.
All three of them.
Well, the cameraman just leaves it there. We go to a WrestleMania commercial away with Kelly Kelly as a lifeguard. A fat guy walks up to her, tries to get her attention, doesn't. So then he pretends to drown. She runs in slow motion to deliver mouth-to-mouth to him. And right as she's about to make contact with his mouth, Mae Young runs in and gives him mouth-to-mouth. And this really made me want to spend $50 on WrestleMania. This was a great spot. Really great spot, everybody. Especially when we compare him to the those great spots for the movie
Hollywood
parodies.
Show.
Yeah. This was not a...
Well, they had to cut back.
I guess so. Kelly Kelly and Mae Young were available. They air a video of Ashley Massaro taking Maria to the Playboy Mansion with the angle that on Raw, tomorrow night, Maria will choose either to do Playboy or stay with Santino Marella. And basically, Massaro was taking her to this Playboy party to convince Maria to do Playboy. And it included this fake chat with Hugh Hefner, who recommends she does Playboy. And it ends with Maria saying, "I have so much to think about." Poor Maria.
Well, why not? This is fun. Builds interest.
This was, I recall that at this point in time, WWE was still sending us prize packs to give away on the show, and we got some WrestleMania prize packs that contained the Maria Playboy.
That's right.
It's like, really? Are these prize packs you just blindly hand out to your audiences?
Huh.
Porn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Playboy is not porn.
It's classy porn.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. Next up, it's Ric Flair and Mr. Kennedy. And I will refer to him as Anderson, I bet, throughout this match. Yeah. I found this confusing taking notes. I kept writing down Anderson.
Me too.
Very difficult. He's the exact same character with a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And the stip here, of course, everybody, was if Ric Flair lost, then he had to retire. Kennedy comes out and says, "Tonight marks the end of an era. He's going to end the career of Ric Flair here in Las Vegas at No Way Out."
Why not?
Sure. Anderson mocks the Flair strut early on. Attacks the left knee of Flair, which was taped up, then delivers a half Boston crab, wraps Flair's leg around the post, and then puts the figure four onto the post. Kennedy puts Flair into the figure four, but Flair reaches the ropes. Kennedy then hits a rolling fireman's carry for a two count. Flair made a brief comeback with two clips to the knee of Kennedy. Then he rolled up Kennedy, pulling the trunks. Sorry, Kennedy rolls up Flair, pulls Flair's trunk so his whole ass was exposed to everybody. Free PG, everybody. Flair then goes for the figure four. Anderson comes back with a small package to reverse it. Flair then gets the figure four on a second time. Kennedy taps out, and Flair announces himself as the winner and says, in a legit statement, I will never retire.
Which is true.
It's true. He is not retired, and even with a torn rotator cuff, he's wrestling on Impact this week.
Let me think about this. What I hated most about this match, it was actually a pretty decent match, but what I didn't like
was okay.
Kennedy using the figure four, not just once, but twice, using it first around the post and then as a transitional move. Earlier on, Kennedy using the figure four on Ric Flair, it kind of trivializes Ric Flair's finisher. And for Kennedy to tap to Ric Flair using the figure four later on, I didn't buy it.
Tougher. It's harder. It's been used for
years.
But he's
a 50-year-old man applying the move.
50 years of using that figure four. I don't know.
I just don't like it. I don't think he needed to do that.
At this time... This angle with Ric Flair, it was pretty well known, like he was going to be wrapping things up. And this whole angle, I thought it was terrible at this time. And everyone was saying how, well, Flair should lose to MVP or Kennedy and put over a star on his way out. That should be the guy who beats him. And watching this match, granted we didn't have the context of the lead up here, and but can you imagine if Kennedy had beat him on this show and ended it as opposed to the Michaels finishing me? A lot of people criticize, well, Michaels doesn't need to beat Flair, but I thought that match was so well done.
I don't think Kennedy was the right guy.
No, me neither.
Maybe if there's somebody else who was near that top level that just needed a win like this, then I could have bought it.
It's really hard. I used to always be of the mindset that, you know, Taker should eventually lose to a guy. I completely disagree with that now. I don't think Taker should ever lose at Mania. I think he should retire with that streak. I think there would be more. Okay, it'd be a perfect example of
Fedor.
Fedor, exactly. Where no one, not a whole lot of people are clamoring about Antonio Silva is now that it's more the focus is on Fedor's loss. It's like Seth Petruzzelli did not become a superstar by beating Kimbo Slice. It was more Kimbo Slice lost. And I think more people would be disappointed that Taker lost and have this animosity towards this babyface that was booked to beat him rather than looking at this guy who beat him as the next linear step in The Undertaker.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Anyway, you do not care at all.
No, I absolutely do care. I just I completely agree with you, and I don't really have anything to add. I mean, look at Fabricio Werdum. He is a bigger star than he was before, but he is not near the same level.
Look at that text message poll they did on Saturday night on the Strikeforce show. Werdum got 3% of the votes to win the tournament. Arlovski got something like, I think he got like the second or third highest amount of votes. And Arlovski, you look on paper, no way that guy was going through three guys in that tournament. No way. So perception is a lot different than in terms of guys like actual talents and who people buy into as, you know, top guys. It's interesting. So we continue on. We're in the trainer's room with Finlay, who has these big welts on his back from that chokeslam he took onto the steel floor. And Vince McMahon walks in and asks, what's going to happen tomorrow night when Finlay's son, Hornswoggle, faces McMahon in a steel cage match on Raw? And I keep forgetting Hornswoggle was presented as Finlay's son in the storyline.
Vince's son.
But then it was revealed Hornswoggle was actually Finlay's son and not Vince's.
Yes.
That was the whole impetus behind Bradshaw coming back and revealing that. With these welts on his back, I thought Vince was going to end the segment by just slapping him in the back on those welts. I was glad he didn't. That would have looked terribly painful. We see JBL pacing backstage. And then we go into our world title match, everybody. It's Edge against Rey Mysterio, who is accompanied by a torn bicep. Coachman says that what happens in Vegas usually stays here, but what happens tonight will take someone to Orlando for WrestleMania. Very clever, Jonathan Coachman. We get a video preview for the match. Cheesy, cheesy sound effects here for the stuff with Vicky and Edge and the music for Edge's proposal on Valentine's Day to Vicky. And it ends with Rey taking out Vicky with the seated senton, and Vicky's on the wheelchair. We saw that earlier. And then the video just ends with this silence. And I really enjoyed Edge and Vicky at this point in time on the show. They were a great part of SmackDown. Rey comes out with a white Santo mask and this conquistador outfit. Looked like a Vegas showgirl almost.
Hmm. I thought he looked like a Power Ranger.
He did kind of look like Tommy as the White Ranger here. You're right. They play up Mysterio's injury. Early on, there's a baseball slide to Mysterio on the floor, and Cole and Coachman sell it like it's the most damaging maneuver of all time that Edge has hit, a baseball slide to Mysterio, the injured Mysterio. Mysterio is then thrown into the steps. Edge misses another baseball slide into Rey's arm while Rey is in the Tree of Woe. Mysterio comes back with a moonsault for a near fall. Then he hits the 619 for a hope spot, comes off the second rope, and dives into a spear from Edge in midair, and Edge gets the win. This was booked for like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Clearly, Rey couldn't go here with his arm injury. The doctors then help Rey out, and what did you think of this? It was a very, very quick match. It was like a TV match.
It really was. And
not much you could do with Rey here.
Nope, but respect to the guy for coming here to work the match and to do this angle.
And I just remember feeling so bad knowing there were big plans from Mania, and it's like, this guy's going to be out for months. The doctors help Rey out, and then Big Show's music hits, and he comes out in a blazer with jeans.
This is Big Show's first appearance in
December of 2006 he had left.
Okay.
First appearance in over a year. And he had clearly lost a lot of weight, and then brought up in his promo, he's lost 108 pounds, which is almost as much as Arthur's lost on Biggest Loser. But you could totally do a WWE version of The Biggest Loser.
Huh.
Where you...
Yeah, with Husky Harris.
Yeah.
Who else?
That would be like the... Feel like a shoot segment of against guys that they're really pissed off about who have never lost weight.
Oh, Vicky, they could put Vicky James.
Who
in there.
Can? Okay, I'm going to throw this out. If you guys could put together a WWE Biggest Loser, who would be the eight guys you would put on? Okay, this could be fun. I think Husky Harris is one we'll nominate for sure because that's the reason he's off TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I would be so much more interested. It would bury guys, but it would be so much better than the Diva Search coming back.
Yeah.
And you could almost, you could do it in a way where it doesn't necessarily bury guys.
Come on. Are you kidding me?
WWE inevitably would.
The whole show is about burying
the
guys.
WWE couldn't help themselves in burying them. But I think you could do it in a segment where guys have said, listen, I'm a WWE wrestler. I'm on the road 300 days a year, and I've let myself go, and I want to get back into. Yeah.
But whoever is on that show, whether he wins or loses, will never be taken seriously as a intimidating performer.
I don't know. From watching Biggest Loser, these guys come off as like these guys who are like killing themselves to try and lose weight, that they don't come across as losers, despite the name of the show.
Okay.
I don't know. It would be terrible in WWE, but I would still, I don't know. I'm on a big loser hit.
How
right
about
now.
The biggest gainer?
Who can gain the most weight?
Yeah, you could take a really thin guy.
The Rock.
Or Brian, CM Punk.
Yeah. All right.
Lance Storm.
who can get the most height? The biggest grower. God, this is why we don't work for the company, everybody. Big Show says he missed this place, and he says he will be champion again. 3 years later, we're still waiting for that title to come Big Show's way. They cut to Rey here, still being helped on the floor. Talks about his weight loss. Then Big Show gets out of the ring. He's clearly upset that Rey's stealing his thunder here. And he teases choke-slamming Rey, and then he gestures to Mayweather Jr. in the front row, who's Rey's buddy. Floyd just shakes his head like Way would, with disapproval. He's just not happy. Then Big Show and Rey are in the ring. He goes for a choke-slam. Floyd's people are holding him back. There's no commentary on this. I watched the DVD and it sounded like the commentary was like edited off. Didn't sound natural, the sound.
Maybe. I thought that they were just going for effect.
Okay, well,
I watched online, so I think I watched the DVD as well.
Yeah. So,
but it worked much better without commentary.
Yeah, you didn't need commentary here. I knew what was happening. Mayweather's in the ring for a stare down. People are holding Floyd back. Show then shoves Mayweather. Show then gets onto one knee, and Floyd comes over and just punches him right in the face.
Like 4 or 5 times in the span of 2 seconds.
This is a guy
who's a combo.
And this is a guy. Floyd Mayweather is someone with very fragile hands. Like, it's been documented of how his hands have to be, like, constantly taken care of in preparation for fights because they are just so brittle. Mm-hmm. And here he's connected. Like, he full out connected with Big Show here, broke his nose. And then Floyd just sprints through the crowd with his entourage. Show chases after him. One dude just fucking got ran over as he's going over the barricade, falls, and Big Show just like murders him. And Shane McMahon comes out of the audience to stop Big Show. Big Show's nose is all bloody here. And then they walk back to the ring. Or sorry, they walk backstage. No commentary. This angle got over great.
Mm-hmm.
This was done tremendously.
Shane coming out was a... excellent touch. The
looked
nose,
like, yeah,
the nose was, being broken was fantastic as well. I don't think they planned for that.
Probably not.
No, but the camera angle of the Big Show with blood dripping down his nose was excellent. This was a perfect segment, and they couldn't really have done it better. The entourage added so much. I remember like watching this actually live and just thinking how the entourage added so much and. They all did well. They all played their roles incredibly well.
It's something WWE, sometimes they just hit home runs with kicking off angles, and then it's the follow-up that they just have such a big problem with. And this angle, to me, was a perfect example of it. It started off so hot, but by the time WrestleMania came, it didn't have that same buzz to me that it should have had. Mainly because Mayweather was a babyface. He's just a natural heel. But this angle was great. Added a whole lot. And actually, we had heard a few days before this pay-per-view that on the Saturday night, they had brought in guys for a rehearsal for the pay-per-view. And everyone was saying how, oh, they're so worried about this SmackDown Chamber match that they're bringing the guys in to go over the match. And it was actually this angle that they were rehearsing the night before because they didn't want anything to fuck up. Oh. And it actually wasn't the Chamber guys that they were worried about. It was
interesting.
Just getting this to ready. We get another WrestleMania promo spot. Then Jeff Hardy's getting ready in a very ghetto-looking locker room. And we throw to Mike Adamly, who was in the crowd. All he had to do was set up this video package for Orton and Cena. And he fucks up the letters WWE.
Sucking out our colleague, Mike Adamly. Well, JR and King, of course, John Cena is looking to reclaim the WWE Championship.
Says WEW. The Women's Extreme Wrestling Championship.
Women's Extreme Wrestling title, because it's going to be defended here. And we go to this video package for Randy Orton and John Cena. Mike Adamly. Two for two, everybody, because it was at the Rumble the prior month where we got Jeff Harvey.
Yeah.
Have you seen that that clip? I put it on my Facebook wall, the Grammy reporter.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. I felt really bad afterwards because apparently she was like suffering like a form of a stroke while that was happening. Hmm. And it's like a kind of stroke where you don't even realize anything's wrong, but blood is being cut off. And
maybe that's what happened to Mike Adamly.
Well, dude, Mike Adamly like legit has like epilepsy.
Oh, so that explains it.
But it's not like he had no control over what he was saying. He just fucked up a word.
Did he have dyslexia as well?
I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway. I still laugh at him. It's still funny.
It's like stuff you just jokingly laugh at that you think is just a standalone funny clip, and then you find out, oh, the person's having a stroke. It's less funny.
Well, this is why you shouldn't find out.
Yeah.
Just laugh. Just laugh at people.
All right.
Don't let reality get in the way of comedy.
It's a great point. Video preview. It goes all the way back to October of 2007, where Cena was taken out in storyline by Randy Orton on Raw. And there was a promo by Vince in this stating that Cena could be out anywhere from 6 to 12 months. And the tease was he would miss WrestleMania. But then he showed up, shockingly, at the Royal Rumble in the number 30 spot. A legitimate surprise in the modern age. And Cena won the Rumble the prior month. And then he wants to cash in his Rumble title shot at No Way Out instead of WrestleMania. Which, logically, why would you give up the main event at WrestleMania and the payday for No Way Out? He just wanted that title so badly.
Well, there are no paydays in
story
the universe.
Line. Right,
yes.
Right. Of course, you just do this because you love it.
Mm-hmm.
Love of the game. Cena was legitimately injured at this point and out. People thought he would be out and miss WrestleMania, but he came back at the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this match 1 month early instead of at WrestleMania. So they kind of promoted this as the WrestleMania main event.
It really
no
was.
Way out.
And it felt that way.
Not at the end, it didn't. But
but when the two of them got in there and they were in the ring, the crowd was incredibly hot for this.
They were.
In reality, there was a whole four-month build to this storyline.
This was in storyline, it was Randy Orton who had taken out John Cena. Mm-hmm. So they had set that up. And I hated Randy Orton's theme music here. It just so did not fit this guy.
You know, but back then, I remember when he changed to the theme song that he had now, we all hated the song that he had now and wished that he had kept his old one.
I think theme music is something you got to give some time to. But this theme at this time, it just screamed babyface to me.
Hey!
Yes. Such a bad song.
In hindsight, I agree. I'm just more used to his current theme song right now. But especially with Orton's new character, his long, slow walk to the the ring, the new theme song
fits him much better. Yes. And he hadn't really narrowed in on that character at this point. Crowd was buzzing, as you mentioned, at the start of this match. Way we got dueling chants, and then each side just got louder, and it led to the Orton fans chanting, "Let's go Orton," mm-hmm. louder, so the Cena fans would go louder for them, and it was really cool to hear.
And going back to what you said on Reveal Raw this past week, there really was a split between the older fans cheering for Orton and the younger fans cheering for Cena.
Yeah, you really had that at this point. Big right hand by Orton to the head of Cena early on, and Orton connects, shakes his right hand, and you see him just go, "Fuck!" Right for the camera to catch. And Orton recovers and just poses. And then Cena rolls him up for a two. Cena hits a guillotine leg drop off the top rope for a two count. Cena goes for the FU, but Orton escapes and delivers a European uppercut. Got a long rear chin lock spot by Orton that Cena eventually powers out of. Then hits a shoulder block and the five knuckle shuffle. Cena then finally locks on the STFU. And they zoom out, so you see the STFU spot with the WrestleMania poster overlooking them.
Hmm.
It's kind of a well-done shot. And Orton reaches the ropes. Orton then climbs out, and he's screaming that his knee is hurt from this STFU. And he tells the referee to count him out. "I'm hurt." Cena comes out and says, "He's not hurt." And Orton then just hits him with an RKO. Cena's laying on the floor as Orton gets back into the ring. Cena makes it back by the count of nine. They're staring at each other, and Orton then slaps the referee, who calls for the bell. And Cena hits Orton with the FU after the bell is rung and puts him in the STFU. Orton taps, but the referee has left the ring, and the match is over. Cena wins by disqualification. Shit finish here.
Mm.
And
the match itself I found kind of boring, too. They both...
The crowd was good for it.
Yeah, the crowd was great, but I'm not a fan of either man's move sets. Just a lot of kicking and punching. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't get too creative in their matches, I will say that. And I just thought this was a lame... If you were going to build this as the WrestleMania main event, knowing that it was just going to be a fuck finish to build to WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
I almost think it's almost like... You fuck the fan. It's like you trick them into buying this pay-per-view to see the WrestleMania main event, knowing full well that, no, you're still going to buy the WrestleMania main event. That's where you'll get
the payoff.
They
do this all the time.
I understand, but this was so blatant. This was the most uncreative finish I've seen in a main event match in years, slapping the referee.
Yeah. What was the main event that year?
For Mania?
At Mania? Yeah.
The legendary three-way with Cena, Orton, and Triple H.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well...
That was it, everybody.
Yeah.
So at least this can go on last.
Hold on. What would you have done then? Would you have had Cena go over in this?
I think you could have done the DQ finish, but I think you just could have done it in a more clever manner. And I'm sure if you spent 5 minutes, you could have come up with something more creative than guy just slaps him in the face. Like, why didn't Orton do that in the first minute?
Because he thought he had a chance. And then by the end, he gave up.
Okay.
But I completely agree with you. I mean, they do it all the time. And like this is the problem with the February pay-per-view. You need to have that marquee main event for your February show.
It needs to be.
But you still need to build whatever match you have for Mania.
Personally, I wouldn't have booked this match for the February show. I would have given Orton a underdog challenger, something like Lawler is this year, mm-hmm. where Orton murders him in like 3 minutes.
Then would they have done the buy rate that they did for this show?
I think the chamber matches were... way much a much bigger draw. This was the first year they did two chamber matches.
Yeah, but Cena going for Orton, I'm sure that had a huge effect as well.
I don't know about that. You had seen that.
This was Cena cashing in his WrestleMania title shot.
Well, I'm sure that added to it. I'm sure that had an effect. But I would be curious what this show would have done without that on it, and just the first time you're presenting not one but two chamber matches. Hmm. You got to remember, it had been over a year since they had even had a chamber match.
Yeah, maybe. So, but for me, the draw was this match.
Yeah.
For the show.
Well, then you were left really unhappy at the
end. Yes, I was.
So, Triple H is in his locker room with a toothpick. Shawn Michaels walks in and says, "This is the time they usually give out some silly lines and shill merchandise, but has a feeling that isn't appropriate tonight." Yeah, no shit, it's not appropriate right before the main event of a pay-per-view. Both want to win tonight, and Michael says that's why their friendship will last the test of time, because they're both on the same page. And then they made out. Results of the WWE text messaging poll. Results were the question was, who would win the Elimination Chamber tonight? Jeff Hardy, 38%. Triple H, 31%. Michaels, 21%. Jericho, 7%. Umaga, 2%. And JBL, 1%. Which begs the question, who was the 1% that thought JBL was winning this match? So that brings us to our main event. Lillian Garcia, who I gave credit to. She had a long announcement here of the rules of this match. And she did it flawlessly. And I don't think you would have someone in your ear feeding you all these lines to do seamlessly. Mm-hmm. But she ended it with, the winner and the last man standing will be declared the winner. So the winner will be declared the winner, everybody, for confusion. We've got Triple H, Umaga, JBL, Jeff Hardy, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels. Michaels comes out wearing a baseball cap. I don't know why you would wear a baseball cap to the ring.
He's balding,
I guess.
That's why. None of these six men are currently active in the WWE.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
None of them. Jericho and Michaels start the match. They trade near falls early. Jericho gets his knees up as Michaels goes for an elbow drop. Then Michaels gets his knees up when Jericho goes for the lion salt. But Jericho takes the knees and immediately just stands up and goes for the walls. Michaels counters and goes for a sharpshooter, and it leads to a roll-up by Jericho for a two count. Very good opening 4 minutes here. And Umaga comes out number three, hits a double Samoan drop to Jericho and Michaels, and they push that as the first time they've ever seen that. They build to a spot where Jericho has Umaga in the walls while Michael simultaneously applies the crossface to Umaga. JBL is then in number four, breaks up the submission. I wrote down, why would you do that? And then Lawler basically said the same thing. This would not hurt JBL. It wasn't first one to get a finish. It was just elimination. So why would you stop these two from eliminating the biggest guy in the match? Umaga then body slams Michaels onto the steel floor. But they cut away right as Michaels' back is about to connect with the steel. But then they showed a replay for it. Jericho hits a tornado DDT to JBL. Michaels is bleeding buckets here. And they show a replay twice of Jericho stiffing him with a flying forearm to the face. And I don't know if he fucked up his nose or what, but he was bleeding a gigantic amount here. Hunter was out fifth. Umaga's then thrown into the plexiglass by Hunter in a spot that looked very good. Clothesline from hell to Triple H by JBL, and then Jericho hits the code breaker on JBL, so JBL is eliminated, and 1% of the viewers were very disappointed here. JBL then brings chairs in, lays out Jericho and Michaels, who get their hands up, and then hits an unprotected chair shot to Umaga. Jericho is then bleeding from this chair shot. Michaels is also, they show him where he's just dripping blood at this point. Jeff Hardy's the final entrant, number six in the ring, and he goes after Umaga. There's a poetry in motion to Umaga where Hardy goes off the back of Jericho. See a whisper in the wind to both Hunter and Michaels. And then Hunter's in the tree of woe. Michaels is thrown into the corner and does the upside down bump, which going head first into Hunter's groin. This looked very painful if you were Hunter. Umaga then hits the ass bump into Jericho to break the chamber plexiglass, spot I would not want to take. Then we see the sweet chin music, a code breaker, and pedigree delivered to Umaga, and Hardy finishes with the swanton bomb to Umaga, and then Jericho climbs over and pins Umaga. Jericho is then hit with the sweet chin music immediately after that pinfall, and Hardy pins Jericho. Hardy then hits the twist of fate to Michaels. Hunter tosses Hardy out and pedigrees Michaels for the win. And it was just rapid-fire eliminations here, where it's now all of a sudden down to Hardy and Hunter. Hardy repeatedly throws Hunter face-first into the fencing. Then Hunter takes a back body drop into the ring. Hardy misses a swanton. Hunter then hits a pedigree, but Hardy kicks out. This got a huge pop. No one kicked out of the pedigree at this point. And then finally, Hunter brings a chair in. Hardy counters with a low blow. He attempts the twist of fate, or the twist of hate, depending on your definition, and takes a back bump onto the chair with Hunter countering the twist of hate. And then Hunter then hits a pedigree onto the chair and eliminates Hardy. And Hunter is your winner.
There it is.
Very good match to end, but the eliminations were just so fast at the end. It was like all in a span of like 4 minutes, everyone got eliminated.
Well, I wonder if they were inching up to.
They might have been
o'clock.
And just had to realize maybe something went wrong, and they just had to.
Good match, I thought.
Yeah, it was a very good match, and overall, pretty good show. Mm-hmm. I gave this 7.5 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I thought the Floyd angle was really well done. Mm-hmm. The two chamber matches were great. The SmackDown one really over-delivered. I didn't like the Cena Orton thing at all. I thought that was very poor. Mm-hmm. And Edge Ray, I think they did all they could. So overall, very good pay-per-view. And did this give you interest in the following month's WrestleMania? Did they do a good job of that on the show?
You know, I really enjoyed the Floyd Mayweather thing as well. And going into it, I guess I was confused with the Orton Cena finish and Triple H winning, because I'm never a fan of multi-man matches, especially for your main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, it was pretty clear based on the results here. They were going three-way here, mm-hmm. with Cena getting screwed. And then you got Edge and Taker, which was set up at this, which they went ahead with. And you had Floyd and Big Show, and those were your big matches for WrestleMania that year.
And on paper, those nothing really stood out to me about that Mania. So, but this match, the event itself was good. I like going back and watching old, or like more current shows.
Yeah, especially there's enough time that's passed where you can look at them in a different light.
Yeah.
Where things led afterwards. Uh-huh. So I do recall enjoying this pay-per-view a lot when it first occurred, and so enjoyed it a second time around.
7 out of 10 for me.
Well, that's good. Wow, I gave a higher rating than you.
Yeah.
That's the first time, I think, since the Amoeba that you've had a lower rating than me. All right, well, before we go into your feedback, me and Wei thought of a cool little idea here. You see, the law's been around for quite a number of years, and we're going to go back into our archives right now to the night of February 17th, 2008, the night of No Way Out 2008, and here's a quick snippet from that show. It's Dan the Mouth Lavransky chatting with Dave Meltzer just an hour after No Way Out 2008 concluded.
Right now, as we always do every Sunday night at this time, we welcome Dave Meltzer, the editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And as always, we got lots to talk about.
Yeah, we do. Excuse me, we sure do this week. Wow.
All right. Well, we got to start off with tonight's pay-per-view. A really, really spectacular show, I thought. And the angle with the Big Show, Dave, the way that was played out, I thought, somebody show that to Vince Russo, like, quick. To show him how a celebrity needs to be booked. I thought they did a great job with that.
That was tremendous.
Like it was. Dave, did you have any idea that Show was coming back at this point? I mean, I figured.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that he was coming back on this show, but I've known Show was coming back for two, 3 months.
Well, right. But I figured something for Mania, that they would set up something for Mania.
Yeah, I had actually thought he was coming back about 2 or 3 weeks ago on Raw. They did some photo shoots with him and nothing else. But I didn't know they were doing an angle with Mayweather. That surprised me.
It was incredibly well done. It looks like, obviously, Big Show said, you know, in order to get this over, hit me as hard as you can.
Well, the thing that surprised me a lot, and Mayweather's got bad hands. So, I mean, to me, no, I mean, like they break easy.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Because he has to, like, you know, like, he can't spar for long periods of time because of all the pounding his hands took. So for him to hit a guy like that, bare knuckle, I'm shocked. Shocked that his people let him do that.
Right.
You know, but he whacked him.
Yeah, he certainly did. I thought it was just an amazingly well done angle. And I mean, where do you think the plan is to go with this now, Dave? Obviously, they're not going to do a worked match between the two, are they? Or
I don't know. I'm gonna try to find out. You know, today where it goes. But yeah,
like, they wouldn't do a worked boxing match, would they?
Maybe. Oh, I don't know if they could, because then you've got commission problems. Now,
yeah.
What state is this going to be in? It's
Orlando, Florida.
Orlando, Florida. So I don't know what kind of how the commission would be. A lot of boxing people would not be happy if he did a work boxing match.
Right. But I mean, what else do you do aside from, you know, kind of like what they did with Trump and McMahon last year, and each guy gets a guy, or like I don't know what else you do. There's got to be some sort of
Maybe Mayweather manages somebody. Maybe Mayweather referees a match. I don't know.
Like, I mean, Big Show, wasn't there talk that Big Show was going to get into boxing when he first left?
Well, he was training to be a boxer. That's how he lost all that weight, was boxing training. But in the end, I think that he realized, you know, he's 36 years old, and that's awfully late to be starting boxing.
Right.
And also, I don't know that he would ever have the stamina, even lighter, you know, he could have the stamina to box, a long match.
Right. I'm just curious. Like, tonight's angle was so good. I'm just curious now as to where it goes, and I'm hoping they can capitalize on what they had tonight. Because if you notice, Dave, for the match after that, the crowd was so wound up for that match after that because of that angle.
Yeah, that angle was really good, and the Raw Elimination Chamber match was very good too.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a couple of questions coming out of tonight. Batista to me seems to be odd man out for Mania. Does he go in the Money in the Bank match? He doesn't seem to have a program.
Yeah, maybe he'll be. Maybe it's Batista and Big Show in the Mayweather match.
So maybe he's involved in that somehow.
Maybe I'm just thinking because you want a big name for the rub and he's the odd man out.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you put him in Money in the Bank because it's almost like guys at that level, they don't put in Money in the Bank.
Yeah, right. It's like a step down.
Yeah, Money in the Bank's probably going to be for like
Kennedy.
You know, Jeff Hardy to win, I'm thinking.
Right.
Yeah, for Kennedy and MVP and those guys, yeah.
Speaking of Jeff Hardy, again, Dave, great job of keeping him strong tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they had him in there at the end and he kicked out of the pedigree, which was pretty cool. It looked good, yeah.
And I got to ask about the opening match with Punk. Has Punk upset somebody? He seems to be getting buried at a phenomenal rate here.
Yeah, he has. I'm not exactly. I had heard a couple of. I guess it was right before the Rumble. Something happened. You know where? I don't know. I don't know the whole story because I. You know when Chavo threw him out at the Rumble, it made no sense because he should throw Chavo out of the Rumble, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I asked about that, and it was kind of like, yeah, well, you know. He's being punished right now. So, but I was still surprised. You know, frog splash 1-2-3 in the middle. You know that.
Me too.
Yeah.
That one left me confused. And I like the way that they worked the Ray real life injury, worked it into the story and kept the match short. Have we heard what's going to happen with Ray? Is he going to have the surgery or?
I don't know the answer to that. My impression was he wasn't going to have the surgery. But I hope he does.
Yeah. So what the plan would be, what, he'd take a break and rehab till Mania or something? Or
I just heard that he wants to work Mania real bad.
Right, because he didn't get a chance to. Was it last year he didn't get a chance?
Yeah, last year because he had the knee injury. He didn't work Mania, yeah.
Right. Well, I hope that works out for him. I like the way they did it tonight, just, you know, taking reality and keeping the match short and kind of playing off that.
Yeah, and he didn't take too many risks. He did two or three things, though, that, you know, that 619 on a torn bicep, I don't know about that one. He must have been hurting real bad.
Right. And also, I have to say, I thought the SmackDown Chamber match came off better than most of us thought it would.
Because they built the whole match around Batista and Undertaker, who they have confidence in. But I thought that the segment with Big Daddy V and with Great Khali, yep. I thought that was horrible.
But
it was
horrible
at the beginning, but it got good by the end.
At least it was only that little 4-minute segment with each guy. Like, at least they didn't leave him in there for a long time. They both got taken out.
Khali, they couldn't afford to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
even with a dress rehearsal the night before, eh?
Yeah. I think I don't know this, but I think the dress rehearsal was probably for the Floyd Big Show stuff.
Oh, it wasn't for that? It wasn't for the Chamber match?
Maybe it was for both. I'll find out. But when now that I think about it, I mean, for sure you would want a dress rehearsal for the Floyd thing because, you know, you can't do that live with no rehearsal. There's no way.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it's just too many problems. So I think that one they probably went over and over.
And I'm guessing because of the finish in Cena and Orton, it looks to me now like it's going to be a three-way on the Raw side.
Yeah, I don't know. No one's. I would think so. I mean, and that makes the most sense anyway because, the thing is that if Triple H is going to win the title, he can beat Orton, but you still have Cena in that main event, and you still have Triple H and Cena to go to when Cena's movie's done.
Right. Right. We're talking with Dave Meltzer, the editor of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, and you're listening to live audio wrestling here on Fight Network Radio. I know we talked about this a little bit last week, Dave, and I suspect we're going to start hearing the names maybe even tomorrow, but has the list been finalized for the Hall of Fame for Mania?
I'm sure it has. I have not heard all of the names, but I had heard that they'd finalized it about two, three weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and... They were trying to like figure out like who would present for who and things like that. So that was kind of what they were working on. And I'm not sure who is going to be for different people. Other than The Rock for Rocky Johnson, Peter Maivia, if he comes, which I'm expecting that he is. Everything I hear leads me to believe he is. I he's got a lot going on, so. I don't know that it's 100%, but I got the impression from the company also that they expected him in, and that was one of the things that they were going
to
do.
Right. I have to laugh this week as well because this seems to happen every year around WrestleMania. Hogan announcing that he's got some sort of TV deal to form his own wrestling company. Didn't he say this last year around WrestleMania too?
I think it's like been six times. I mean, it's either. He's got his own. He's going to start his own promotion, or the 1 year when he was going to join the XWF, and then the 1 year when he was going to join TNA, and it's like a broken record, you know.
It's so funny.
I think he was like a month late this year, but that's probably because he has so much. He probably has so much to do between the gladiators and everything. He probably didn't have time to start his own promotion. But I mean, like the reality is I'm sitting here going, like, what can he do? I mean,
yeah.
There's no talent.
Right. Exactly.
Everybody is under contract.
But you know what he would do? He would go get all those guys like Knobs and Bagwell and Beefcake and. He'd just go for all those old guys anyways.
Yeah, but the problem with that is you can only do like 1 week of TV and everyone's going to go, oh, God, all those old guys, I'll never want to watch again.
Yeah, true.
So, and he's not going to... One thing I know about Hulk Hogan, especially now, is he ain't going to be risking his own money on anything.
Yeah, well, that's it exactly, with the divorce and with the case with his son, however that plays out. Yeah, he's going to need all his money, that's for sure.
That was Dave Meltzer with Dan the Mouth of Vransky. And, of course, you can hear Dave every Sunday night on Live Audio Wrestling, 11 p.m. Eastern on the Score Sirius 98. And, of course, Dave runs his own website with Brian Alvarez at WrestlingObserver.com.
So we'll get into our feedback now, everybody. We'll start off with Ahmad Butt, who prefaces his email by stating, it's 5 a.m. and I haven't slept yet, so I decided to just write some feedback. Guys, I was happy to hear you guys put Chris Kanyon over in the Greed Review. Kanyon was always one of my favorite workers. Who better than Kanyon? Not many, that's for sure. I had a question for you two. If a WWE and a world title unification match were to happen in 2 years at WrestleMania 29, who would you book as the competitors? For me, I believe it's important to have an established veteran pitted against a newer established wrestler. So assuming Triple H is still wrestling in 2 years, I think you put him in a bout with CM Punk. I know it's obvious I'm a huge Punk mark, but this is still a feud they haven't really touched and think it could be a moneymaker. Your thoughts? And P.S. I appreciate all the work you two do on the podcast. Definitely don't think Hunter's going to be wrestling in 2 years. I think he's going to be done in 6 months, personally. If not, he could be done after WrestleMania this year, for all we know. So I don't see him being around. And it's so hard to see like who would be in that position 2 years from now to be in a big match like that.
If it was WrestleMania and if John Cena is still as big of a draw as he is right now, if he is still the main character of the WWE,
he'll
probably be one of those guys. As far as the Triple H CM Punk feud goes, if it's going to happen right now, I think I would just... I don't know about in 2 years' time because Hunter could... Like you mentioned, he could either be not wrestling or in 2 years' time it could be his retirement bout. But I just don't see that turning up well for CM Punk. I feel like anybody who wrestles against Hunter at this point is just... Like, look at Sheamus, for instance. He's been waiting for Hunter for a whole year and it just killed his steam.
Yeah, you would think with the year-long wait that it would be huge by now and there's zero interest in that program.
Oh, Brandon Infinger. For whatever reason, I was going to sit down and watch Creed. Dear God, I forgot how bad WCW really was at this point. Queeby walks out, dressed like the love child of a clown and a homosexual. Surprisingly, the match was better than expected, partly due to these two jobbers nearly killing themselves. I thought someone was going to die when they did that spot from the top where Kiwi reversed the powerbomb into a Hurricane Rana. After this match, Mega Video stopped working, and I feel like I came out of out on the good end of this. I feel really bad for you guys having to watch this shit. But take solace in knowing you make my workday go by much faster listening to your reviews. True martyrs.
It was really something watching these shows.
That was a good match, though. I had no problem watching
that. It was a good match. I agree.
Wee-wee match.
It was really just something, though. And granted, this was years apart, but you could compare a WWE pay-per-view at the time to Greed, specifically that show with their production and stuff. And it was like so big of a distance between these two. Like, fuck, man, WWE is like a major league production. And WCW at the end was like, fuck.
Well, you can compare it to WWE and TNA today.
You're right. Yeah, totally.
It's just money.
Matt Waters, awesome review for Greed. Admittedly, I've never seen the whole show, but just to add to the Bagwell Luger spot after the match, I guess it angered Finlay, who was an agent at the time, to the point that when the WWE took over, he begged WWE management to let him have a handicap match against Buff and Luger because he wanted a chance to beat the shit out of both of them. And Matt also provided a link to Lance Storm doing an interview where he told this story where Finlay on the, I think it was the final Nitro, where he wanted to have a handicap match with Luger and Bagwell and just beat the fuck out of them on TV.
Did not know that. Greg Taylor, great review for Greed. Guests like Hudson and Lagana fit in great with your format. Please keep it up. One minor point that is a pet peeve, not unlike your ironic pet peeve, of mine is Pollock saying the word finals in discussing the last match of a tournament. It is final, not finals. There's not more than one final matchup. Don't perpetuate a mistake that the NBA keeps alive.
Well, if the NBA, if it's good enough for the NBA, it's good enough for our podcast. Daily Brennan. Hey, I really enjoyed the review for Greed, and it was excellent to hear from Scott Hudson. I think you made a salient point when you pointed out that the youngsters on the card really worked hard. It kind of reminded me of TNA now. Speaking of TNA, instead of watching Against All Odds last night, I chose to watch SummerSlam 2000 and was ultimately 2,000 times more entertained. I think that you should review this show one day, as I actually cared about all but one of the matches.
What was that show?
SummerSlam 2000. It was Rock, Hunter, and Angle, and it also had the first TLC match.
Oh. Okay, maybe we will. Devin Clark. Queeby was in TNA in 2002. Alan Funk joined TNA Wrestling on June 19th, 2002 as Bruce, another homosexual gimmick, forming a short-lived tag team with Lenny Lane known as the Rainbow Express. The tag team split on November 20th, 2002. Bruce also won the Miss TNA Championship on August 7th, 2002. Thank you, Devin Wikipedia Clark.
Yes, the definitive history of Alan Funk. I didn't even do this on purpose. We now go to John Funk.
No.
Hey, guys, I was wondering if you know if there were ever any plans for Shawn Michaels during late 98 and 99 when he kept coming back to the Fed. I know he was the commissioner and all, but he was still using the DX theme when he would come to the ring and whatnot, and occasionally called DX members or cost the matches. Were there ever any plans on bringing back Michaels earlier than when they did, perhaps to feud with Hunter at this particular point? Thanks for any possible insight. During specifically at 98-99, WWE would have absolutely used him if they could. Michaels, like, his back was legitimately fucked. It wasn't like his, you know, finding a smile for his knee injury. I mean, these were the most profitable years for the WWE, and Michaels basically got out as the boom started. So those would have been some of Michaels, they would have been Michaels' biggest earning years if he could have gone. He clearly couldn't at that point. And they did want to use him for WrestleMania 2001, the big one at the Astrodome, but he showed up at television that week in no condition to perform, was sent home and not used at WrestleMania. And that actually, because he was going to be involved in Hunter's program for WrestleMania that year, Michaels kind of screwed that up, and those two actually didn't talk for a while after that.
What exactly, what does that mean, in no shape to perform? Was he was fat?
No, like he was high.
Oh.
Yeah, like
really?
Slurring
at
his
that
speech.
Point?
Yeah, he was a big pillhead at that point.
Even in 2001?
Yeah, he talks about that a lot in some interviews, his book, and he had had a kid at this point, too, and it was basically like, you've got to, like,
so when did he
change your life
when
around.
Did he become a born-again Christian?
It was later that year, I think.
Oh, okay.
And then he made the comeback in mid-2002.
Oh, great.
So that stuff's pretty well documented. But yeah, believe me, if Shawn Michaels could have wrestled in 98, 99, he would have. And it was just a case that his back was, you know, he was told he couldn't.
Fascinating. Mark Cardoso. Question about the Hall of Fame. Since it's in Georgia, could there be a chance Jake the Snake Roberts be inducted this year? If Arn Anderson gets inducted, do you guys think TNA will let Flair go to the show?
Jake the Snake, there's definitely a possibility. They could. It's their thought process. It's not like it follows any kind of formula. Jake the Snake, why not? Would TNA allow Flair to go? I would assume yes. They would probably release him from his contract for the weekend so he could do Mania as well. Sam Kennerly. As someone who has a full right arm sleeve of tattoos, 10mm earplug, and has dyed his hair in the past, I think I'd rather cut my tattoos out with a rusty blade than have Shannon fucking Moore be a representation of my artistic expression.
Wow.
Well, it's not a Shannon Moore fan.
There you go. Mike Still, about the conversation you guys were having about wrestling fans knowing to lower their expectations when they come in, when they tune in, compared to what you guys compared it to, football fans. I know if I turned on a football game and got 16 minutes of actual football in a two-hour period, I'd probably stop watching.
I think the point I was trying to make was not so much the... a show having less wrestling or not. I think that's immaterial, really. If you can have a solid... I mean...
This past week's
a great example. The last half hour of Raw featured no wrestling, but it was a phenomenal segment that is going to significantly affect the WrestleMania amount of buys. So, I mean, that was just a solid segment. You don't have to have great wrestling. Conversely, you could have 30 minutes of just shit where it's
But that's pro wrestling, though. In football... you're tuning in for the game. You're not tuning in for backstage.
Well, yeah, and that's what we're comparing. Pro wrestling, there's an aspect of it that is talking, and it's
yes.
So you're right. My point being that I think a lot of times people will tune into an Impact or to any kind of show, and it will like make excuses for stuff being poor, and it's just you don't find that with any other shows where you'll just defend bad stuff or just feel that, oh, well, it's TNA, and therefore, by TNA standards, this was a good angle. Well, why does it have to – why do you have to lower your standards? It should be, by your standards, this sucked.
Yeah.
That's what
I mean, we've seen good TNA shows, too, and you can go in expecting a good TNA show, but get a bad one.
Let's keep going here.
Zelomir.
Yes. Zelomir Penicia. I don't know your last name.
Seneca.
Pesenica. There's an accent on these, so it could be completely different. Guys, heard your latest review of Raw episode, and I have to admit that I expected some kind of mark out like every wrestling fan had, but instead you couldn't possibly sound less enthusiastic and left us with remarks like, he looks big. Or something like, I'm sure he will be gone after WrestleMania. When exactly did you lose the joy to live? Stop trolling. When did we want to die, Way? When was that?
I don't know. Maybe it was when we reviewed Heroes of Wrestling.
That might have been the end, everybody. I responded to Zelomir this past week, and maybe I was a little harsh in my response. I apologize for that, Zelomir.
But it was very entertaining to watch John
Paul. That's what I seek out to do. And Zelomir, I apologize if we didn't convey. I think me and Wei were pretty clear that we enjoyed the segment, correct?
Yeah, of course.
I thought it was really well done. The fact that we said he was going to be gone after WrestleMania is because odds are he's going to be gone after WrestleMania. I mean, maybe this will mean he's going to do more unannounced appearances throughout the year. Maybe it won't be so long between appearances.
Yeah. But you're just stating your facts and the opinions. I mean, it was a day later, so it wasn't like we were still ecstatic like the moment we probably both saw it at the same time. But nonetheless, we both... on the podcast talked about how much we enjoyed that segment.
Yeah, it was a very good segment, so we apologize for being reserved.
Andrew McMahon, I think it's time to put an end to the Divas division. Natalya and Eve are actually having a fun little match, trading kip-ups, submissions, even had the crowd ooing, but then they got the other girls involved, and it went to hell. Worst of all, the commentators were burying Natalya and not giving a shit about the match in general. But that's been the case forever now. I can't imagine the last time a Divas match was given serious commentary instead of the commentators joking about something completely off topic. And it sucks because Natalya and Laquelle were having very good matches every time they wrestled. I feel so bad for these girls because it's hard enough being a wrestler, but being a female wrestler, it's already predetermined that you're terrible and have no business being there. And that's absolutely true. I mean, I think we're all very hard on the women, maybe sometimes even more so than the men. But a lot of times they have the bad matches too, so some of it's
I think a lot of it goes with, you know, the fact is Caitlyn has been training for less than 6 months, and she was thrown out there on TV. I think Mason Ryan is getting the same amount of criticism that Caitlin does because he's been there sure. a very short amount of time in mm-hmm. developmental, and he himself was telling people he wasn't even ready to be the Florida Championship Wrestling Champion, mm-hmm. like when they put the title on him in Florida, right. much less fast-track him to Raw. So I think definitely there is a certain harsher spotlight put on the women because I think in general a lot of the women are coming from non-wrestling backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Diva Search will be a perfect example of that, where you're taking people who are models and don't have an athletic background and with the belief, well, we can teach anybody to wrestle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a backwards formula to try and put together female talent. There are some extremely talented women out there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can check out Shimmer, Ring of Honor. There's lots of outlets for strong women's wrestling. I mean, in the mid-90s, All Japan women, they were outworking the males. Mm-hmm. Like, it was incredible during that time period. Go back to 92, 93 and check out some Manami Toyota matches. It was an incredible time period for them. So anyway, that's my thoughts. Devin Clark, CNBC officially is the consumer news and business channel.
Okay. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yes. Two more here as we finish off. Are we? Oh.
Yeah. I don't have it. We got one from Tommy Chung. Hello, gents. I wanted to comment on a random subject, if you don't mind. I've been listening to your show since the beginning, and I'm a big fan. Week after week, I hear you guys ripping R-Truth another asshole and calling Booker an idiot. And you're correct. But as a black man, I can't help but think, shit, do we have any good black wrestlers right now? It almost sounds like you guys hate on all the black wrestlers, which I know you guys don't. And I know you guys say, and I know what you guys say is very truthful. That's bittersweet for me because I love wrestling, but I hate how many people are represented in it. How my people are represented in it. And, well, we're racist. That's correct.
Don't say that. It's completely ridiculous. The fact is, everybody, if someone has a terrible segment and fucks up their promo like R-Truth did, we will make fun of it, much yeah. like Mike Adamley did, who, last I checked, is white.
Yes. The people, unfortunately, the black wrestlers, most of them right now in the WWE, all just suck. I mean, with the exception of The Rock, who we praise all the time highly.
I mean, like, color really has nothing to do with how talented a guy is. Shelton Benjamin, for years, was considered one of the most underrated talents in the company mm-hmm. and was never pushed to that level. And to further that, tonight on The Law, we had Shelton on the show where he specifically spoke about WWE officials wanting him to act more black, mm-hmm. whatever that means, talk with more jive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the own WWE mindset of it, of how they want a black character to act. Mm-hmm. R-Truth getting made fun of has nothing to do
Absolutely
with his
not.
Skin color.
I mean, like, I've been a fan of the Pope. I just hate the way he is being booked right now in TNA. But as a Raw talent, I very much enjoy his promos and his ability.
I think Kenny King has become one of the most improved guys in Ring of Honor over the past year. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're trying to make a case now for
Yeah, it's
not
ridiculous.
Being racist.
But, you know, like, Tommy, I sympathize with you because if I – like, whenever I could understand, because if somebody were to constantly criticize Asian wrestlers or whatever, I would – it would be so ridiculous to even feel it. But sometimes you really can't help it because those are the only people that are representing you in on the TV screen. But you really just have to learn to understand that these people don't represent you. They don't. They're just bad wrestlers, and they don't represent you. They just represent bad wrestling.
A lot of people have talked about, you know, is the WWE racist because of people they choose to push? And I do fully believe if they feel they can make money with somebody, they will push them. I mean, mm-hmm. you saw Bobby Lashley pushed well above where he was ready to be. I mean, if they think that a guy can connect with the audience, they will do that. Have there been instances of racism presented on television? Absolutely. There's no question about that. But I don't feel race comes into who are we going to push. But that's my opinion. And we'll finish off with Sammy Taylor. You realize, guys, that I only watch TNA so I can listen to your review and impact. to just support and fuel your great show. Don't want to start anything here, but I would pay $5 a month for all this great stuff you do. Imagine $5 times 1,400 fans a month. That's $7,000 between you a month. Just something to think about. Sorry, fans, but don't even suggest the notion to your girlfriends. They'll make you do it. Cheers from Sammy in the Bahamas. Well, we appreciate that from Sammy. I don't know if 1,400 people would agree.
I don't know if 1,400 people are willing to pay us $5, but, you know, like, who knows?
Well, we'd love to hear your feedback for any of the stuff we discussed in the feedback today, everybody. And quickly, we got to get out of here, but next week's review will be... You did not think of something.
Of course I did. I would like to review, John... Because of all the hype surrounding The Rock's return, I would like to review No Way Out 2003, featuring the rematch between The Rock and Hogan.
Ah, that's a good comparison because we have reviewed Rock Hogan 1. Mm-hmm. Let's see how Rock Hogan 2 lives up. Mm-hmm. And that was in Montreal.
Oh,
so we lovely. Will check that out. The Rock as a heel.
Yes.
Against Hulk Hogan.
And we are approaching WrestleMania season, and as you all know, we like to review a lot of the previous WrestleManias.
Yes, we did so 6 last year.
We did, which is tremendous. And so we'd like to hear your requests. Yeah. Which WrestleManias would you like us to talk about?
Yeah, I think maybe starting next week we'll start doing Manias because we're about 4 or 5 weeks out from the show at that point. So we will definitely post what WrestleManias you want to hear us review. But next week it will be No Way Out 2003. And I want to go out with a tune, everybody. This girl came out of nowhere and beat Justin Bieber for Best New Artist. I don't know her name and I don't know the song, but this is her.